Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So, Vic, do you think you might have ADHD?
Well, listeners keep emailing me, telling me that they think I do, so probably.
Mind you, listeners also email us saying we talk too much about your mum's feet, so what do they know?
Yeah, fair enough.
I honestly had no idea about the connection between overdrinking and ADHD until we started this podcast.
About 40% of people that have had any sort of drinking issues also apparently have ADHD.
Whenever we chat to ex-drinkers, this comes up more than you'd believe. If you have ADHD or suspect you might, or just want to learn about this link, then we would encourage you to check out the I Have ADHD podcast.
It's the place where adults with ADHD find research-based information, validation, and tons of support.
This is the best way to feel less alone and hear some of the answers to the questions you've been sitting with for too long. You'll hear detailed descriptions of what it means to have ADHD and enjoy interviews with the foremost experts in the industry so that you don't have to read those ADHD books that are collecting dust on your shelf.
Yeah. Listen to the I Have ADHD podcast and learn how ADHD affects every aspect of your life, from the boardroom to the bedroom.
In the podcast, you'll also hear about their ADHD coaching program, which is called Focused. Focused is made up of three pillars: courses, coaching, and community. It is designed to help you build your own self-improvement program and is perfect for the ADHD brain.
And you can get $50 off the course just by using the code SOBER, S-O-B-E-R. So if you're tired of feeling stuck and don't know where to start, listen to the I Have ADHD podcast.
The kettle's boiled, Vic.
Great. Perfect timing. Just a dash of milk for me, please, mate.
Here you go. Shall we get started then?
Have you ever woken up on a Sunday morning and said, I'm never drinking again, and then found yourself waving 50 bucks at a barman by happy hour?
Are you wondering why everyone else can stop at one, while you head to a dodgy after party with a weird bloke called Disco Dave? If so, it might be time to take a deeper look at your relationship with your reliable social crutch, alcohol.
On each episode, we'll investigate our own dysfunctional dealings with booze and find out if it's possible to stop this deeply ingrained habit before things get too messy.
Yep, we're going to open up a shame shed of humiliating drinking stories to help you understand why waking up from a booze coma each weekend with a kebab sticking out of your top pocket might actually be negatively impacting your health.
Hamish and I are here to delve into what it's like being sober, an unwanted warts and all look into why giving up those cheeky pints or putting down those mummy wines will make you feel happier, help your anxiety and mental health, and turn you into the most sparkly, authentic version of you.
Won't that mean I become boring though, Vic?
Well, Hamish, we'll just have to wait and see. I'm Victoria Vanstone.
I'm Hamish Adams-Cairns.
And this is Sober Awkward.
I read a whole book in one evening and one morning.
Oh, I was listening to you on the podcast actually yesterday. You did read Atomic Habits on the plane, didn't you?
I did read that. That's a good point.
Yes, you read it in 3 hours.
That is a good point. Okay.
Yeah,
I have achieved something that I have done only twice in the last
that's
4 months.
Like it. You can't get away with it with me. You can't lie
that's
to me, Hamish.
Point.
I know everything about you.
I did read that in one flight.
You did, yes.
And Oh, that's a good point. Okay, that takes some of the shine off. But yes, the book this time, it's not something I do regularly now, is just read books in a day, Matthew Perry's book.
Yeah.
And we're talking, you read it, yeah. You enjoyed it, he passed away, I got the book off you the following week, and I read it in a day.
Yeah, so sad. What terrible news to hear about Matthew Perry. Addiction is a horrible thing, isn't it, Hamish?
Awful. Yeah. And it has inspired this episode.
Yeah, totally. We're going to have a bit of a chat about fame.
You also had a fairly interesting interaction with someone famous this week. A good news interaction rather than the bad news of Matthew Perry.
Yeah.
I reckon you're dying to get this off your chest.
Of course I am.
Please do.
I actually was lying in bed this week with John. It was a Saturday morning and I was like, oh, I've just got a message on my phone. I was going to have a look at it. Leant over. It was from one of the Foo Fighters asking me if I wanted to go and play frisbee with him before his gig in Brisbane next month.
So many questions.
Oh, my God. And actually, the Foo Fighters lost their drummer, Taylor Hawkins, to addiction. I think it was about a year ago now. I'd love to have a chat with him about it. Yeah. So there's so many successful people in this industry that pass away. But yeah, so I'm going down to Brisbane next month. I'm going to report back on this.
Yeah. Should we like mic him up and mic you up and you could have a conversation whilst playing frisbee that we could do as a podcast episode?
Have you been listening to that girl who played tennis with her?
No.
Okay, I'm going to... There's a new podcast out, the very good podcast. It's a funny American girl. I'll send it to you. And she played tennis with a famous person. And I listened to it yesterday.
Oh, that's quite fun. Yeah. One of my favourite... We love recommending other podcasts, not podcasts. Yeah. One of my favourite is Emily Dean Walking the Dog.
Oh, yes.
And I think that's cool to do an interview whilst doing something else. So you could just do it as a frisbee player.
Yeah, Lee Mack was on that walking his dog with her. Yes, yeah.
No, does he have a dog? Or
yes, he got a dog. Yeah, he's done two episodes Batsy with dog her. Home. Yes, yeah, he's got a dog.
Love it.
Yeah, so I'm so excited about that. It's the funny things that happen in sobriety. I did do a smug Facebook post about it, Hamish.
You did.
I wrote, weird things happen when you get sober. And the weirdest thing today is that Rami from the Foo Fighters messaged me.
So if you're 4.5 years sober, 6 months from now, you might get an email or a text from a Foo Fighter. Pick herself.
From me going, hello, do you want to play frisbee? And then I'll message you again and again and again if you don't respond. And then I'll go into some sort of mental turmoil.
Yeah, or you'll just show up at their front door.
Yeah, I thought you said you wanted to go and play frisbee with me. Yes. So I will hopefully be having a chat with him, but you never know. I have asked him to come on the podcast. Anyway, today we're going to have a chat about fame, exactly that. Recently, Matthew Perry died. We were so sad. For many people, it really felt like an old friend passing. There was a real outpouring of grief worldwide. But the sad thing is, I don't think he really felt that love when he was here. Do you, Hamish?
Often the way, isn't it?
Yeah. I just finished a book before Hamish, and it was so up and down. It was so lonely, and it really got me questioning. Would this have happened to him? Would he have died so young if he'd not been famous? And I wonder if the answer is possibly no, Hamish.
Possibly. This is something that we see all the time with people like Amy Winehouse. A fresh-faced, beautiful young star rises to the top of the charts, has huge success, and then we watch them unravel. They slowly fall apart in view of the public eye, and it's terrible to watch.
So today we're going to ask, why do so many people in the limelight have drug or alcohol dependency?
It seems people strive for fame and fortune, and then when they get there, if not managed correctly, it's much more isolating than they could have predicted. And there are other factors involved here too: money, ego, time, even the lack of support from the people that work for them. In fact, one of the lines in Matthew Perry's book, he said, "No one who hasn't got fame and rich will fully understand that once you get there, you realise that those dreams are the wrong dreams."
Oh, wow, okay.
He wrote it more beautifully than I've described, but basically, because, you know, they'd say that all the time. You hear famous people say, oh, you know, I'm a multimillionaire and I'm famous and I still have all of my issues. And you go, ah, bollocks, I bet it's really nice being rich and famous. And he said, really, you realise when you are rich and famous, they're the wrong dreams to be chasing.
It's not always cracked up to be, I also wonder, does getting tons of unconditional love from fans really fill your cup, as you say? If you can't see it, it's not tangible, then is it really there? The reason we want to talk about this today is because as a society, we see fame as something to aspire to. But is it really all it's cracked up to be? When you have others controlling your every move, expectations upon you, a heavy workload, people that look up to you, and way too many nights in hotel rooms, where does it all lead?
It could be it's terrible loneliness, and for some, addiction issues. I love this topic because I think sometimes we ignore that being famous could actually be an affliction, a race for money and recognition, people-pleasery to the extreme. If occasionally can go well, some people survive the fame game, but for others, it leads to using a substance to numb out the overwhelm.
Yeah, many celebrities manifest a strong work ethic and a high drive for success. When mixed with certain societal pressures and unhealthy relationships, it can all go wrong. A celebrity life is a public life at the end of the day and is often criticised harshly. Their everyday appearances, their opinions, how they dress, their weight, it all adds up. Peer pressure, whether from colleagues or friends or the general public, is known to have huge impact on the development of alcoholism. Let's have a bit of a chat about our experiences of fame, Hamish, because they're very minimal, aren't they?
I think I can count on two fingers the amount of times that I have been recognised.
Yeah, one and a half, I can.
One, two-thirds for you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a huge amount of experience with fame, but I guess we are at, and I think this is a relevant point, I think we are so small time that being recognised at all is still a huge buzz for us.
Super exciting.
I think that maybe begins to wean or dissipate as you get more famous, to the point Matthew Perry might get stopped 100 times in a day and might be disappointed it wasn't 150.
Yeah.
I think maybe you get to that stage.
And someone told me that Matthew Perry, I think you told me actually this week, that he had to go for dates and he had to hire out the whole restaurant. He couldn't just turn up to a restaurant.
No. The dates were in his hotel room.
Oh,
he was on dating apps and it wasn't his photo on his profile.
Right.
And then he'd be chatting with them and he had to say who he was, and then his dates would be in his hotel rooms.
So it's like this weird reality, isn't it, for a really famous person like that. It's just not fun, is it?
I don't think there's, other than royalty, anyone who maybe would get stopped as often as someone like a Matthew Perry, because his persona was friendly and funny and relatable and chatty, and you know he'd be a good time to chat to. So I think maybe what happens with fame is the more you get of it, the less those interactions that you and I are getting irregularly now mean.
Yes.
And you expect a level of recognition, you expect a level of being treated like a VIP, and when you don't get it, I can only imagine it starts to feel a bit shit.
Yeah. A VIP for now is like, just buy me a chocolate biscuit and I'm happy kind of thing. Recently at the camping weekend, a woman sent me an email afterwards to say thanks so much. She said, I felt like I was with a celebrity. I was like, who's that then? She was like, you.
Yeah.
I was like, just because you listen to my voice. But the thing is, people listen to this podcast every day sometimes.
Yeah.
And we go for their walks with them and walk their dog and go to the gym with them. Mm. We're like their best mates. So sometimes we both have it where people feel a little bit like excitable when they meet us. I find it really awkward because I'm just embarrassed that someone could like me that much to feel nervous around me. Do you know what I mean?
It's so odd. You know, I've felt that way about podcasters for years.
Yeah.
I know them so well. I hear their voice in my headphones. Yeah. Like, they've never met me, but I totally understand them. Yeah. And now we get people coming up to a live show or randomly being like, I know everything about you. I'm like, this is so odd. Yeah. I'm the fan of podcasts. Yeah. This is bizarre that someone
bizarre.
Knows our, like, people hear our voice and go, oh, you're from the podcast. Yeah. Oh, so odd.
We love it, actually. So yeah, always say hello to us. I there was a girl who emailed me once, said, oh, I saw you walking up Mount Coolum. I'm a big fan of the podcast, but I was too scared to say hello. I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. Just say hello. It's fine. I'm not going to push you aside and refuse to give you my autograph.
Yes.
Although I haven't been asked my autograph yet, Hamish.
No. I think we're beyond that as a generation. People aren't doing autographs. You might have to sign some books.
Yeah, I need to practice that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about adding a cock and balls to my signature.
You did on Liz's book.
Yes, I did, didn't I? Yes. Maybe with a little bit of ejaculate
semen.
Coming.
Yeah. I think you should do that, yeah.
Yeah, I think it goes with the tone of the book, don't you?
Yeah.
It's quality stuff, that book, Hamish.
Or maybe only do cock and balls on like 100 of them and then they become limited edition.
Exclusive.
You could number them. So cock and ball one, cock and ball two, yeah.
Okay, that's a really good idea, yeah.
This is not relevant for
the
episode.
It'll come up on the Antiques Roadshow in 100 years.
Yeah.
Oh, who is this book by?
I think just the thought of becoming famous for some people can be addictive too. As Dennis Prager said, people can become addicted to fame, money and attention as deeply as they become addicted to drugs.
Hey, I'm going to interject here. Have you ever met anyone famous? More importantly, have you ever drunk or taken drugs with anyone famous?
Okay. I had a pint with Danny Dyer on my...
Oh, yes, that was a good one.
20th birthday?
Yep.
That was cool. He's like one of those like joke heroes of mine.
They're both EastEnders. I've got an EastEnders.
That's true. You've got an EastEnders. Yeah. So he's sort of, probably one of my favourite celebrities, because it's funny for Danny Dyer to be a favourite celebrity. And I bumped into him literally on my birthday.
That's cool.
That was a huge joy. I got a selfie with him and my brother. I dated Tilda Swinton's niece for years.
Yes.
So I know her quite well. I've lucky enough to be on holiday with her. She's one of the most wonderful human beings I've ever met.
That's quite famous, Hamish.
Yep, she's quite famous. Her kids, wonderful people. David Hasselhoff, I've told you, I've met him three times. He's probably the celebrity that I've met the most often.
That is random.
Which is so random. Andrew Scott is my favourite actor in the world.
Yeah, I don't know who he is.
Yeah, you do know who he is. He was Moriarty in Sherlock.
Okay, yes, I do know who he is.
Everyone needs to Google and type in Andrew Scott, then type in Seawall. Seawall is a play. It's a one-man play that he performed.
Okay, right.
It is the greatest. It's half an hour long. You'll cry. It's
okay. Oh,
extraordinary.
That sounds good.
I can't remember what the playwright was, but it was amazing. So I was once in a Eurostar lounge and he was sitting next to me by himself and I didn't have the balls to go and say hi.
I'm disappointed in that.
I regret that to my days. It's unlike me. I'm actually quite good at not going up to celebrities and ruining their nights.
I'm not.
Yeah. Mm. I did do it with Gary Lineker once and it was the last night before I moved to Australia and I went up to him and it was clear he didn't want to see me.
Oh,
obviously, he's Gary Lineker.
It's embarrassing, isn't it?
And then my favourite celebrity is David Beckham.
Yes.
And this is kind of fitting, this story. I went to get tickets to an Andrew Scott play. Yeah. I had to get there at 8 in the morning. They do a release every day. It was the last night of the play. I cycle there. I get there at 8 o'clock, sign on the door. We're not doing that today. No tickets to go. Gutted. So I get on my bike, turn around, get to a T-junction, look to my left. There's a Bentley and David Beckham is in the Bentley.
You're joking.
And I didn't know what to do with myself. He's been my hero since I was 6, 7.
Yeah.
And as I cycle past him, I do one of those awkward sort of salutes.
Oh, yeah.
And he looked at me with a look of like, it's me, David Beckham. Oh. He didn't salute back,
no, but
I won't judge him for it.
It wasn't a moody look. It was
it was like, yeah, I'm David Beckham.
Oh, that's
It was
nice.
Quite a cool look.
Okay, that is good.
But yeah, I feel like at some point I need to sit down with David Beckham and with Andrew Scott and just hang out.
I'll try and arrange it for you.
If you could.
Because I sit emailing celebrities on a daily basis to try and get them on the podcast, so I'll email them.
The Foo Fighters, your good mates. I reckon they'd answer a call from Beckham.
We can use our celebrity
contacts.
Let's
use the Foos.
Yes, yes, let's use them.
What about you? You're going to have some good celebrity interactions.
Well, Sharon from EastEnders, Letitia Dean, that was my first one when I was about 9. I met her in a lift in Reading. Mm-hmm. I was very excited. I also met Seal in Reading Station once, which was also very exciting. I met Frank Bruno at an airport.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was very cool. We did the big laugh.
What did you do with him? When you say you met them, what did you do with them?
I went up and got his autograph.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've still got it.
Do you?
Yeah, and Letitia Dean's. I've still got it stuck in diaries.
I wrote Beckham a letter and he answered, signed thing. I don't know what it is.
He's not going to write, so he's not going to come on the podcast.
I reckon he had someone who does the signature.
I should think so. I kissed Robbie Williams when I smelt of cheese when I was drunk once.
That's cool.
This week, both of us watched the Robbie Williams documentary, which is actually about what we're talking about today, isn't it? The trappings of fame. Again, I thought for a lot of that time that Robbie Williams was happy with his fame. You thought he was kind of this egotistical guy who all he wanted was that level of fame. But it turns out it made him miserable. Mm. He was having anxiety. He had actually relapsed after being sober for, 10, 15 years, I think?
And he's a huge introvert. And his whole act is built on confidence, right?
Yeah. It was a sad, lonely story. But I thought Hamish in that documentary, wasn't he a gentleman throughout? Mm. I know he was an addict and he had his ups and his downs, but he seemed to always treat people with respect. And I thought the way they did it, him looking back and watching himself spiralling out of control and how traumatic it was for him to see that. Like, I would hate to see myself in my early 20s watch the spiral unfurl. It would have been a really horrible thing to watch.
It was like self-therapy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But do you watch it with one eye expecting to see yourself kiss him smelling of cheese?
Yeah, I was hoping that would
think
be one of the shots.
I didn't spot you in it. You might have been in it.
I think I was in it. It was a moment. Flicked to Brighton Beach and there was me smelling of cheese.
How old were you?
Emanating. Oh, that I was about 18 then.
Okay.
So, I kissed him. He was lovely. I snogged Lenny Kravitz when I was about 14.
You're quite a famous snogger.
Backstage. I just basically try and leap on anyone that's famous and wrap my lips around their faces.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you were 14.
Yeah,
we'll
these people don't have a choice.
Slide.
Yeah. Just me trying to snog people. I'm just sticking my tongue out in every direction.
Lovely.
Until it catches on to someone
else.
Catches
a famous person.
Fat Boy Sim, of course, for this podcast.
Sure.
I didn't try and plant one on him, though, you'll be pleased to hear. Although I was a bit jittery, I have to admit.
I reckon if he'd lent in, you would have given him a little
kiss. Yes, I would have given him a little kiss, yeah. There was Trigger from Only Fools and Horses in a nightclub in London when me and Bogfish, my mate, were a bit off our tits and we kept asking him for drugs, which was embarrassing, and saying, "All right, Dave," out of Only Fools and Horses, which was really awkward. And he was actually really avoiding us by the end of the night.
He would.
We were doing it quite a lot.
Oh, I need to tell you my Harry Potter story because that's inspired me. Daniel Radcliffe used to be a big drinker, now sober. More than welcome to come on the podcast whenever you like, Harry.
Yes, welcome, Daniel.
And he used to go to a lot of the pubs that I used to go to in London. This is a story that a friend of mine had with an interaction with him. He went to the loo, got to the urinal, and he's standing next to Daniel Radcliffe. Fucking hell, Harry Potter. Didn't say anything. Mm. Went back, a few more drinks, go back in, urinal. Daniel Radcliffe next to him again.
Oh, right.
The pee schedule has aligned. He's okay, like, I need to say something now. He's obviously two or three drinks further in. He says, I don't know why I said this, but I turned to him and I just went, where's your mum now, Potter? Daniel Radcliffe looks at him awkwardly, zipped up and left the pub.
It's such a good story.
I don't know why I said it. I don't know. I don't even know if that's a line from the film. Oh. Where's your mum now, Potter?
It is, yeah.
Is it?
When I look back on situations, like sometimes you go, God, I wish I'd said this, I wish I'd said that, and you kind of walk away from those interactions going, damn it, I could have really shown them who I was.
Jack, and he got the line spot on.
He nailed it, yeah, he totally nailed it. Of course, Hamish, you know that I locked a member of Van Halen in my parents' attic for a day.
Yeah,
he was really drunk and he had a broken leg and I helped him upstairs to bed. Then I forgot that he was up there and he couldn't get down for about 24 hours. And
that is awful.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah. Was he famous at the time?
Yeah, he was the guitar player, so I don't know Van Halen very well, but I just know that he was not very happy with me the next day. And I once snorted coke with Steve Coogan, but I think most people that lived in Brighton had done that at some point quite honestly.
What was the scenario with that one?
Oh, he just lived in Brighton. He was always out and he's always end up somewhere with Steve Coogan. Cool. There's quite a few Brighton sort of the faces, they used to call them, the faces of Brighton that are always hanging around. He was one of them.
And did he do any Alan Partridge impressions?
He did. He'd walked into my friend's flat and did a 360 and went, aha! And we were like, oh, yes, but you find that a bit cringy.
I don't think I like him for doing that. Yeah. I don't think you can say your own lines when you're famous. If Daniel Craig walked into the pub and goes, Bond, James Bond, up, piss off, Dan.
I would think that was absolutely hilarious.
Would you?
If Daniel Craig walked in and said, I'm Bond, James Bond, I would just think, oh yeah, that is hilarious, mate. Good one.
I don't know. I'm not sure about it.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Do you have a general opinion on famous people, if we can just stereotypicalise a little bit?
Yes, let's stereotypicalise everything. I think it would be cool to like live on a yacht and be able to afford cool stuff and have a chef. Like, that would be my dream thing, to have a chef that cooked me every meal.
Me too.
Would be lovely.
Me too.
It must be stressful being famous. I always think that whenever I love to watch music documentaries. Mm-hmm. One of the best ones I watched was a Robbie Williams one recently. I watched the Michael J. Fox one, who also suffered from alcoholism. One of the best ones I watched was the Avicii documentary recently.
I've been meaning to watch this.
Oh my God, it was so good. It was so sad because he was such a lovely bloke, so successful. The pressure that he was under, his gigs were like from 12 p.m. till 4 in the morning. Then he'd get on the plane, fly to New York, then fly to Tokyo. And his sleeps were on the plane. And we all know what sleeping's like on a plane. It's horrible. And yeah, he just got totally overwhelmed, totally overworked. And in the end, he died. Mm. It's an absolutely terrible, tragic story of fame, that, for such a lovely, kind of an introverted guy who was just an absolute music genius. It was really, really sad. I do love all the diva stuff when it comes to being famous.
Okay, go on.
We talked about this before, because I think it's fair enough that if you're that famous, you should be able to get what you want. Because there's going to be 100 people that are around you that are all getting paid because of this gig that you're doing, or because of a concert, because of whatever. They're all getting paid because you are a good singer or you're a good actor. So I think you should be able to demand
you
what you get.
You have thought about this.
I have.
So if you're famous, what are you demanding?
Well, I'm going to do all of these, all of the following. Are you ready?
Yeah.
So the first one is Kanye West gets his carpets ironed at the venue.
Oh, where he will walk
needs to be ironed. The carpet, yes.
these are all bullshit. You've read these on some shit website.
But I'm lucky if my carpet's fucking hoovered, to be
honest.
That's
true, yeah.
Yeah, so being ironed is pure luxury,
okay, that's
isn't
nice.
It? Yeah. Mariah Carey has 100 white doves released occasionally wherever she goes.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that's good.
That's a
Katy
lot.
Perry, yeah. Poor doves. What are they doing in their spare time?
Exactly. Do they catch them and then bring them to the next venue?
What's going? Is this loads of doves everywhere?
Are they all on strings, like yo-yos?
Pull them back in.
Yeah, I hope so.
Doves. They just flop up to the floor.
They're helium balloons.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Mariah. Katy Perry has a driver who is not allowed to make eye contact with her. This is TMZ style, isn't it?
This is TMZ.
Jay-Z has a cigar roller.
That's cool.
It's probably just a little machine. They just make it dramatise the title.
Yeah.
Madonna has a new toilet seat at every venue. I think
Beyonce
has that as well.
I actually think Snoop Dogg's got a spliff roller as well.
Oh, yeah, fair enough, yeah. Jack White from the White Stripes, he has a no banana zone.
Okay, he can't be around bananas.
Oh, he must be allergic to them.
Is that
or
a phobia or was that an allergy?
Well, yeah, I don't know where I got this information from, but apparently he says we don't want to see any bananas in the building wherever he goes.
That's so good.
Must have an allergy, mustn't he? In
case I like to think it's a phobia.
He's like worried about slipping over, probably.
That's it, yeah, just in case Mario's around.
I actually love all that stuff. If I was paying 200 people's mortgages, I'd demand the same, basically. My ones being limp balls at room temperature, of course, sushi off Tom Hardy's body, and fizzy water with lime on tap. What would yours be?
If I'm going to eat sushi off a human being, who would it be?
Me.
You, yeah. I should say Liz, but I guess Vic. I should say Liz or Emily Ratajkowski, but no, you're right, you. What I think we need to differentiate between in this conversation is the difference between rich and famous.
Okay, yeah.
Rich would be quite nice.
Yes, rich would be nice.
Famous, you get the good bits of rich, but then you get all of these bad bits as well.
So rich and anonymous.
That,
like,
I think is nice.
Some of these sort of like Silicon Valley billionaires.
I think the bassist from Coldplay.
Okay, yeah.
That guy, I don't know what he looks like, but he'd be not that much less rich than Chris Martin.
No.
Quite nice.
Yeah, that would be
think
nice.
If our lives go well, a podcaster, an author, a radio, that's quite nice level of fame.
Because people can't see our faces, so we wouldn't get recognised.
That's true. Yeah. We could do a different social media with different people's faces.
Yeah, they wouldn't know.
People won't know.
We should do that, actually.
That's quite smart.
Yeah.
It's really presumptuous.
Yeah, and then they don't have to see our faces. Yeah. It's probably better for everybody, isn't it?
That's true. We'll make ourselves really hot.
Yeah. Do you watch any talent shows, Hamish? What do you think?
I used to watch X Factor and Britain's Got Talent, and they made me incredibly inspired, but I'm not a singer. But I would feel like, wow, these guys' lives have turned around in 12 weeks. And now it was always at Christmas. Last episode was always at Christmas. It's like, now their lives have changed. It's Christmas and it's glittery and everything's wonderful. Why do you ask me that question?
Well, I used to like them. They used to be sort of funny when they kind of got the dud people on, didn't they?
Yeah, that's always good.
But it was actually really bad that. They don't do that as much anymore. It's really bullying, isn't it? So people come on there with their dreams, with everything that they've planned their whole lives, and then they get ripped to pieces. So that's the first thing I don't like about it, even though I did think it was funny originally. Yep. And then I watch Kids on the Voice or a Simon Cowell talent show, and I see the judges' eyes filling with dollars and the contestants' eyes shining with excitement as they're sent on to the next round. But honestly, I actually nowadays feel scared for the person that wins. I fear that their passion and incredible talent will end up getting exploited. I worry that what they imagine to be fame isn't actually the truth.
Sure.
So it's really frightening when I watch those shows, because I just think, oh God, I don't know what they're set up for. Mm-hmm. And everybody around them is going, oh, look, they're actually going, I can make some money out of this. They're looking at those people and their incredible talent and saying, this is something that I can cash in on.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sick, isn't it? So that's what fame is. It's like other people cashing in on your talent sometimes.
Well, I think as I've gotten older, I've seen that more. So I think when I grew up, I thought fame's great, it's glamorous and awesome. And as I get older, I'm like, oh, it's just, it's not that much to it. They're just normal people who do a job that happens to be on television most of the time. Yeah, so I'm sort of less impressed by famous people as I get older.
Yeah. And the sparkle would fade, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That win that they have on there is probably going to be the highlight of their career. Mm-hmm. Then it's downhill.
Yeah.
And then what happens?
Yeah. Well, I reckon more similar to that, Matthew Perry, I reckon getting famous in the same way like building a business is probably more fun than being famous or selling the business.
Yeah.
You know, I think it is that whole journey being the whole exciting bit rather than the destination.
Totally agree with you. I would have thought that you wanted to be famous. Like, you strike me as the kind of desperate guy.
That's it. I do give off that desperation. No, I don't really. I wouldn't mind being famous. I'm certainly not chasing it. I'm aware that the careers that I want bring with them a level of fame.
Yes.
But that's never really been the attraction for me.
It's not an ego thing.
It's not an ego thing.
I
don't really care.
Yeah.
And I think I would be so aware of not being a dick if I got famous.
Yes.
That actually might be all too over-consuming. Like, I might overplay it the other way around.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I do when I tell people that I have a podcast. I completely am so excited just that I've got a podcast that I end up looking like a dick, because I'm just going, hey, look at me, I've got a podcast. Aren't I cool, sort of thing? And it'd be the same thing to more of an extreme, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, look at me, I'm cool. Yeah, it's just
that's
toss.
One of the ways you look like a dick.
Yeah, just one. There's many other ways.
Oh, there's many.
On a daily basis. I'm going to tell you the psychology behind why most people want to be famous.
Oh, okay, go on.
Aspirations for fame are motivated mainly by the need for validation and attention. Mm-hmm. Oscar Wilde pinpointed the need for people to have their existence recognised. There's only one thing in the world worse than being talked about, and that's not being talked about, he said.
That's the trap of celebrity, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's about being recognised, creating a legacy, wanting wealth and success in the eyes of your peers. There seems to be something deep and enduring in the core of human nature that needs recognition, significance, appreciation, and validation. So that said, would you really want to be famous, Haim?
Not really. I think the best thing about being famous is in that first, I imagine, year or two, you would get to meet all the people you've wanted to meet.
Yes.
You'd be in the same rooms as, for me, Beckham and Andrew Scott, whoever it is. I think that, for sure, would be exciting. And I think that lasts for a bit of time. And then I think the next thing exciting about being famous is you would get the restaurant bookings and you'd walk into places that you weren't able to walk into and you'd have access to places that you wouldn't think imaginable.
Yeah.
I reckon that is great. I reckon the early days of being recognised is rewarding and fun and it's trivial and it's, oh, I've never heard this before. And I reckon that lasts a little bit. And then I think what Oscar Wilde said there, maybe you are afraid. I think I'd be very aware of the fact that fame for most people is short-lived.
Yeah.
You're only really flavour of the month for most people aren't famous for more than 10 years.
Yeah, probably not. There's probably only a probably rare few that are famous their whole life.
Multi-generational, like
Robert De Niro or Al Pacino or something.
Not
like
many, right? Actors, I guess, can, but singers, it's hard to still
very
have
hard
albums when you're older.
Even McCartney gets a bit of shtick every now and again, doesn't he, Hamish?
Does he?
Yeah. It's because they wheel him out and he always does Hey Jude and then they're like, oh, I've heard that many times.
So I think all of that I'd be aware of. And I think because you're not famous for long, I would begin to feel aware of the fact I'm not famous anymore. Like people are stopping to give a shit. And then the amount that you invested your self-worth in being famous, you would feel it hard when you are no longer famous.
Of course.
So I don't think I want it. I think I can see the upsides, but I reckon the downsides are probably longer lasting, particularly if you believe your own shit.
And because of your career changed or you got cancelled, I mean, I feel so sorry for people when that term is used. You're cancelling someone's career, their passion.
Yeah.
You're not just cancelling a person because they've done something stupid. Changing someone's life like that by just using that sort of vocabulary can be very, very hurtful and very, very destructive.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So, Vic, do you think you might have ADHD?
Well, listeners keep emailing me, telling me that they think I do, so probably.
Mind you, listeners also email us saying we talk too much about your mum's feet, so what do they know?
Yeah, fair enough.
I honestly had no idea about the connection between overdrinking and ADHD until we started this podcast.
About 40% of people that have had any sort of drinking issues also apparently have ADHD.
Whenever we chat to ex-drinkers, this comes up more than you'd believe. If you have ADHD or suspect you might, or just want to learn about this link, then we would encourage you to check out the I Have ADHD podcast.
It's the place where adults with ADHD find research-based information, validation, and tons of support.
This is the best way to feel less alone and hear some of the answers to the questions you've been sitting with for too long. You'll hear detailed descriptions of what it means to have ADHD and enjoy interviews with the foremost experts in the industry so that you don't have to read those ADHD books that are collecting dust on your shelf.
Yeah. Listen to the I Have ADHD podcast and learn how ADHD affects every aspect of your life, from the boardroom to the bedroom.
In the podcast, you'll also hear about their ADHD coaching program, which is called Focused. Focused is made up of three pillars: courses, coaching, and community. It is designed to help you build your own self-improvement program and is perfect for the ADHD brain.
And you can get $50 off the course just by using the code SOBER, S-O-B-E-R. So if you're tired of feeling stuck and don't know where to start, listen to the I Have ADHD podcast.
I would say,
how would you feel about it, fame, if it came to you?
I would like to be famous for doing this podcast and helping people.
Yeah.
I think if it's got purpose behind it, I think it's probably okay. I wouldn't want people coming up to me in the street or in a restaurant or anything like that. To have something with purpose is good.
How do you think you would deal with the fact that if you are famous, loads of people hate you because you're famous and there's resentment and jealousy? Like, you know, famous for the podcast doing a good thing. 100 people love you, but 20 people will hate you.
I think I would cope with it very badly, Hamish. Mm. Honestly, that's why I'm having therapy at the moment, because that is one of the things that I fear when my book comes out, for example. I don't want someone to say, oh, she's shit, that book is shit. That's going to make me feel upset. So I need to learn how to take care of that inside my own brain and not take it on. Mm. But it must be very, very hard. Even in that Robbie Williams documentary, he was going out with Jerry Halliwell, wasn't he, at some point? And he mistrusted her and thought that she'd released some photos to the press, didn't he?
Yeah.
And so you end up not trusting everyone. Like, you don't know who it is who likes you and doesn't like you, because you can't read what's happening in someone's brain. You might hate me, Hamish, and I wouldn't actually know about it. I actually had a really good moment in therapy this week where I talked about this with her, saying, look, I'm scared of, like, being rejected. That's all my issues are based upon rejection. And she said, look, have you ever read a Stephen King book and hated it? I was like, yeah, I love Stephen King, but he has written a few dud books. She was like, well, does that make you hate Stephen King? And I was like, no, of course not. I don't actually hate the person. So even if an actor is bad in a movie, I don't hate that person. I just think, well, that was a bad movie. So I think it's a matter of disassociating with how people think about you, because it's not really, they don't really know you.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't really know Matthew Perry. We don't really know Robbie Williams, although I do know one of the Foo Fighters.
You know how his lips taste.
But I think we sort of kid ourselves. Like, people think they know us on this podcast, so they don't really know us. They know the stories that we tell here. Although we are very honest, this is our true selves on here. People don't really know us, and I think if I just remember that and stick to my core values of who I am, I think that's going to be really important when my book comes out, because otherwise I think I would go into some sort of mental spiral. To those that are drawn to this career, like acting or singing, they usually are because they have some kind of talent, be that acting, performing, singing, or an influencer, whatever. Everybody can be famous nowadays. All you have to do is have a vicious chihuahua, which is one of my favourite Instagram accounts, own a duck that can play the piano, or have a nice butt, or play the recorder with one nostril, which I can do. You can get hits, likes, and comments that all give you an ego boost.
And that here is a bit like a drug. People that search out fame are also the sort of people that like to get dopamine hits. They like to be told they're doing well. The opinions of others mean everything and keep them motivated, which means they are relying on an outside source to keep them happy.
Relying on recognition to keep motivated is dangerous. When the fame lessens or gets boring, there is a deficit. I guess fame is like anything. Once you reach it, get to the top of your game and live it every day, it might get boring. Then what?
Drugs and alcohol.
Of course. Whether you are a one-hit wonder or extremely successful, it doesn't really matter. At some point, your moment in the bright stage light will dim, or you'll get so famous that it affects your mental health, and you're left wondering where the simple life went. A stable job and a happy family. Someone who has fame then wants to revert back to the average Joe, which is really hard.
Basically, you want it, you get it. It's not all it's cracked up to be, then you numb it out. We're not saying this happens to everyone. Some rare people can handle fame and fortune, but we've lost lots of stars to this pattern of addiction. People that have reached a place they never imagined and then don't have the tools to deal with the recognition or downfall of their celebrity status. Unfortunately, they are living in a world where everybody, especially newspapers and magazines, are waiting for them to fail. That can't feel nice. So why are our stars numbing out more than most?
Well, sometimes, Hamish, it's because they can get their hands on drugs and alcohol a lot easier than us, for example. There's something called polypharmacy, which is when people use multiple physicians or drug stores to gain access to their drug of choice. And sometimes they have multiple aliases to obtain medications, or you have someone that works for you that goes and gets your drugs. I remember in the Whitney Houston film, she had someone who would pretend to deliver a package and would give her her oxycodone or whatever it was she was taking. It would be much easier as a celebrity to get your hands on the stuff that you want, I should imagine.
For sure. Those both cover access of the drug, people buying you drugs and alcohol because you are famous.
Yes, Georgie Best comes to mind there. He said in his final days that one of the reasons he overdrank was because everyone was always buying him a pint.
Really?
Yeah.
So. My mum met him right at the end of his life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in like a, I think it was a rehab clinic or in like a country club. Yeah, right. She met George Best.
What was she doing there?
Caning it.
Yeah. I was going to say, does it sound like
I reckon it was probably a country club rather than a rehab facility. Yeah.
That's funny. One of the other reasons is loneliness. As we said, nights in hotel rooms, missing out on family, routine and structure. So when you're on tour, these tour buses, and it really reminds me of that Little Peep documentary, Everybody's Everything, which is brilliant. Highly recommend that as an episode to watch alongside this podcast today, because that represented fame to the worst degree, quite honestly. A young chap, really talented. Everybody around him were all his mates that he was paying. In the end, he couldn't trust anyone. The drugs were everywhere. The life was lonely. I think he actually overdosed on fentanyl in the end, and he was there for a while and no one had noticed that he'd actually passed away. And it was a very, very, very sad story. Yeah, so loneliness when you're at the top of your game is very common. In fact, listen to the Justin Bieber song, Lonely, because that sums it up.
So many references this episode.
It sums it up, because I think also, like, famous people get to the point where they want to share this and be like, look, Justin Bieber, I was fucking lonely. I was all over the papers doing stupid shit when I was 15, 16 years old. But the truth of it was, I was taking drugs because I was so lonely. Mm. That song is absolutely brilliant, yeah.
Well, I think that's another trigger, actually, for famous people. Imagine no one feels sorry for famous people.
Yeah.
You don't get any sympathy. Matthew Perry wrote about being miserable when he had the number one TV show and film out at the same time. Justin Bieber's writing a song about feeling it. If you're rich and famous, people don't want to hear it.
No.
And I think that can be quite isolating and quite lonely in itself.
Yeah, because people's attitude is just like, well, you've got everything, mate. What's wrong with you? Like, keep your chin
people
up.
Have got real problems, yeah.
Yeah, cheer up,
for sure.
Mate.
Also, that element of not trusting people. You know, Robbie Williams talks about that a lot. I know Matthew Perry wrote about it in that book. You're paying them. So who are your real friends? What do they want from you?
Yeah. Is that how you feel about me?
Yeah, I'm paying you.
Yeah.
This is the only reason you're sitting here.
I wish you were paying me.
Nah, I'm stealing from you. It's the opposite.
Yeah. It's highly competitive, that environment. A very stressful industry to be in, because you're always trying to outdo everybody if you're famous, I guess. It's a kind of work hard, play hard environment, which would be hard on your mental health.
You have that pressure from the outside world. You want to keep going for the fans that are sort of feeding the fire.
Yeah, totally. Frequent harsh criticism I've put here. Mm. Media, socials, everybody has an opinion of you.
Constantly being in the spotlight and having limited privacy.
Yeah, child stars being thrown into the adult world.
Do a whole episode on child stars.
The Aaron Carter documentary is the one that I watched last week.
Look at you go.
I love
Who's
music
Aaron
documentaries.
Carter?
He was one of the Backstreet Boys' younger brother.
Yeah, yeah.
He was really young when he became very famous. Always looked up to his older brother, who was obviously more famous, and it led him into a spiral of huffing, which is when you inhale gas from canisters. He passed away last year.
Peer pressure, other stars you look up to doing it, normalising it.
Oh, yes.
I think peer pressure, or I think comparison would be an issue for celebrities.
Yeah.
You go, you know, I'm Matthew Perry, but I'm not Brad Pitt.
Yes.
There's always someone more famous or more rich or bigger than you.
It's like keeping
hard.
Up with the Joneses to the extreme, isn't
it? Yeah.
Yeah. Who's more famous? Who's got more followers? That's the other problem now. Who's got...
Yeah, it's too numerical. It's too easy to calculate, isn't it?
How many people do the Kardashians have following them? Is it like a billion or something?
Something like that.
You just can't live a normal
life. But not
life.
As many as The Rock.
Yeah.
Not as many as Ronaldo.
Well, The Rock deserves them at least, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like The Rock.
He's epic.
Yeah, he's epic. Addiction to the high that they get from being in the spotlight and searching for other ways to get the same feeling. So somebody that wants to be famous could be prone to being somebody who wants to feel good about themselves. And of course, in the early stages, that's what drugs and alcohol can offer. As you hear, there are lots of reasons why you'd want to disappear mentally from all of that. Let's have a look at some of our heroes that we've lost along the way to addiction. Some might have been sober when they died, but with long histories of dependency. The body just can't take it anymore, which is perhaps what happened to Matthew Perry as well. People like the 27 Club. Do you know about this, Hamish?
Yeah.
Yep, so it's not a club anyone really wants to be in. People like Kurt Cobain, Brian Jones, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Amy Winehouse all died at the very young age of 27. They achieved so much in that short period of time. It's just incredible that they were so young. I think fame was just too much, an addiction too powerful for some. Other famous people that have died from addiction issues: Whitney Houston, Heath Ledger, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Anna Nicole Smith, Prince, Chris Farley, River Phoenix, Elvis, Vern Troyer, Oliver Reed, Michael Hutchins from Inks.
I used to call it Inks. I called it Inks on the radio last weekend.
Oh, that's embarrassing, Hamish.
I know. I had a caller going, it's not Inks, it's INXS. I was like, why is it spelt like that? I mean, I'm not from round here. It's honestly, if you're listening to this in any country outside of Australia. In Excess is like the Beatles here.
Yeah.
It's like me calling the Beatles.
Getting it wrong is major. Yeah. Especially on an ABC radio show.
Yeah.
I actually snogged Michael Hutchins about a week before he died.
Of course you did.
Yeah. He was performing TGI Friday.
Are there any celebrities that you've snogged that you haven't mentioned in this podcast?
No, there's probably loads. I've got a list.
I have never snogged a celebrity.
God, what have you been doing all your life, Hamish? Yeah.
Yet.
Not yet. You've still got time.
Either my wife has to get famous or
you
need to start licking strangers.
I'm sure you've licked a few strangers in your time, Hamish. Yeah. I'm sure of it.
I've kissed them. They didn't kiss me back.
Yeah. I'm not sure that counts. Statistics from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health say that 23 million Americans need alcohol or drug treatment. Gosh, that is a lot, isn't it?
God.
That's per year. 1 in 8 children grew up in a family with drug or alcohol use disorder. I would say that's probably more. I would say that's the parents that admitted to having drug or alcohol use disorder. I reckon it's probably more like 4 in 8. Mm-hmm. I would say half. Yeah.
She's lost herself in her stats. Yeah, 4 in 8.
Four, eight, 50%. Shit.
I reckon 23 out of 46. Addiction does not discriminate and celebs can't hide from it either. All the money in the world doesn't mean you can avoid a dependency. In fact, the more money you have, the easier it is to get your drug of choice.
For many celebrities, their addiction struggles are played out publicly along with their recovery and their relapse, which is awful to watch, isn't it?
Mm. I think the interesting thing about this episode is that all of these reasons that we are suggesting somebody famous might develop an addiction issue, it's easy to think, oh, well, I'm not famous, so I can't relate. But they're all reasons that anyone with an addiction issue can probably relate to.
Yeah.
That feeling of loneliness, not fitting in. For them, they have an incredible access to booze and drugs. They've had these huge highs. They're trying to reach again. They've got immense dopamine spikes from being recognised all the time.
Yeah.
And they need to fill that void. I think celebrities are not any different to you and I.
No, that's very true, Hamish. And we put them on this pedestal like they're something apart from us.
Yeah.
But of course, they're just humans that are struggling in exactly the same way we are.
And if you're a people pleaser, you know, if you're someone like a Matthew Perry who plays a comedic character on our screens, you've got to pretend to be comedic and wonderful to every stranger that you meet.
Yeah.
And there's not a single person that would have walked past Matthew Perry and not stopped him for a chat and a selfie. So you're constantly acting, which is exhausting.
But also, I think if you were really famous like him, you would be scared to reach out for help, because if you did have to go to rehab, you might have like a film that's going to be done or a concert that you have to cancel. These poor people feel so much pressure from who their employers are and from their fans that they feel like they have to carry on until the point where they'll probably get really unwell.
Yeah.
It's awful. The pressure is really on famous people, I think. And I don't think we respect that enough. And we have really high expectations of them as performers and showmen and all of these really stressful jobs, like getting up on stages and being in front of millions of people all the time. It's like, well, that's your job and you've chosen it. Therefore, we have no empathy for you.
Well, something I've heard a lot of celebrities talk about is the idea of, like, I've never asked to be a role model.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to be a great footballer or a great singer or a great actor. I've never asked to be a role model.
Mm.
So don't tell me that you're disappointed with me when I become a drug addict or a drinker, or you catch me half naked, the paparazzi gets an unattractive photo of me. Like, that's not what I asked for. I asked to be a good footballer. That is what I'm trying to focus on. Don't add more pressure on me than I need.
I think it's so interesting that as well, Haim, because like, those journalists that you're talking about, they're probably sitting at home doing a line of coke while they're writing the article.
Yeah, for
they're
sure,
writing an article about someone who's been on Big Brother who was caught in a pub in London doing a line of coke.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're probably doing coke. They're really judging
and
trying to wrap up these people into one box and say, look at them. They're a terrible person.
Mm.
But everybody does coke on a Friday night in a London pub. Like, that's something that people do.
Yeah.
But we sort of demonise these celebrities to try and make them fail. It must be really a horrible feeling to feel like, instead of bigging them up and going, what a fantastic job you're doing and you're a really hard worker, everyone's going, come on, fail.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really horrible world we live in sometimes. It's just awful. Anyway, I think the message is here, be careful what you wish for. Fame is a fickle friend. It looks all exciting and shiny, but can lead you down a dark path. I think the most important way you can help yourself is by having people you know, love and trust around you when the crazy train leaves the station. I remember we talked about Billie Eilish here, didn't we, Haim, a couple of weeks ago. She's got a really massive support system around her. She's got an incredible family. Yeah. I think her parents are, what are their jobs? I can't remember.
They're musicians or something. Were they
professors or teachers?
Yeah, yeah.
I think they're teachers.
She has a lovely family dynamic.
She's got a lovely family dynamic. She's pretty solid, isn't she, in her character. I think that really, really helps. If you did want to be famous, it's probably a good idea to keep your values close to your heart and maybe write down why you want to be famous. Is it to share your talent with the world or because you want recognition? I think the two are very different.
It's so sad that we lose so many exceptional talents to drugs and alcohol. The good news is that things are changing hugely. There's a wave of sober celebrities that are talking about their choices and sharing how much happier they are now that they've sought out support and got the help they needed. So Vic, let's end on a happy note. These are just a few of the inspiring people that have quit booze.
Adele came out recently as being 6 months
sober.
Did
she? I know. Yeah,
Adele, Tom Holland, Spider-Man, Steve-O, he's an advocate, and his jackass mate, Brandon Novak. I mean, Anthony Kiedis from the Chili Peppers, Demi Lovato, Florence Welch, Millie McIntosh, Tyra Banks, Nicki Minaj, Calvin Harris, Drew Barrymore, Kit Harington, Lily Allen, just to name a few. There's loads.
We know loads. We've written to all of them.
We've written to all of them.
If you're on that list, we've probably written to you.
Yes.
Elton John, please answer our emails.
Yeah.
Robbie Williams.
We say we don't want to be famous, but we do want famous people on the podcast.
It would help the podcast.
It would help get our sobriety message out.
Yes. So if you know anyone famous who you think would be a good guest,
that's a good idea.
Hook us up, Vic and Hamish at soberawkward.com.
Yes. Sober celebs.
Why have we never asked the listeners to set us up?
I say we don't ask the listeners. They need jobs, the listeners, don't
they? Guys, if you know someone who's famous and sober, or famous who might know someone who's famous and sober, set us up.
Or if you know someone that's famous and sober that knows someone's dog that's famous and sober,
we'll
whose tennis
them.
Partner knows them from the local church, then set us
that'll
up.
That'll do.
That'll do.
That'll do.
Any connection. I think, Hamish, we're hitting a wave of change. People are starting to understand that the drugs don't work. And even better than that, famous people are being vocal about it. I feel like being anonymous about sobriety is a bit dated now. Who does that help, in my view? It just reinforces shame about overdrinking. Haim and I both think that talking about shame and talking about our past is the best way to get over it. And I hope these brilliant stars talk about their sobriety too, and their shame stories. Even though selling a billion albums is pretty damn cool, selling sobriety to just one person is definitely a legacy to be proud of.
Let's have some famous quotes for some famous partiers to finish the episode, shall we, Vic?
Good idea.
I'll get the ball rolling with one by Jamie Lee Curtis. Getting sober was the single bravest thing I've ever done and will ever do in my life. Being courageous enough to acknowledge it privately with my family and friends. Working really hard at solidifying it, getting support around it and being healthy. And then talking about it publicly. That is the single greatest accomplishment of my life.
Gosh, incredible. After all,
she'd come on, wouldn't she?
Yeah, she'd come on.
Yeah.
The next one is, remember that just because you hit rock bottom doesn't mean you have to stay there. The lesson is that you can still make mistakes and be forgiven. That's Robbie Downing.
Robbie.
Oh, yeah, I know him.
Yeah.
It's
RDJ.
Yeah, RDJ.
We'll end with a quote from Matthew Perry himself. He said, I'd like to be remembered as someone who lived well, loved well, was a seeker. And his paramount thing is that he wants to help people.
Yeah, that's lovely.
I actually, full disclosure, I actually asked him to be on the podcast. A friend of mine's dad was in a play with him, which he writes about in the book. And I reached out to him 3 weeks before Matthew Perry died and said, can you set me up with him and get him on the podcast? And actually, having read the book, and he talks about how much of a buzz he gets out of helping people and sponsoring people and being a voice to sort of anyone struggling with sobriety, I reckon he would have come on.
Oh, it's a shame, isn't it? We would have loved to have had him on. That's such a sad story. The trappings of fame, it's not all great, is it, at all?
Do you want to end by telling us some famous people you'd still like to meet or kiss?
Yeah, there's loads.
Go on.
Don't
drag it on. Just name me like six or seven. I don't want to be here all day.
I'd like to dance with Christopher Walken, eat a curry with Adam Buxton, go for a walk with Ricky Gervais, hold hands with Mark Ruffalo, and have a girls' night in with Dawn French. How about you?
Oh, yeah. I would like to attend the girls' night in with Dawn French.
You're not invited.
No, it wouldn't really be a girls' night. Well, I've told you about Andrew Scott and Beckham, Emily Ratajkowski for sure. Oh, I've got a good story, actually. I've always wanted to see Beyoncé live.
Yeah.
When I did kids' parties, a friend of mine got called out to Surrey to do a kids' party.
Yeah.
And the call beforehand was a bit of a weird party. There'll only be one kid for the first hour, and then all of the friends will arrive for the second hour. But you're going to start the party in the first hour and do it one-on-one. All right, whatever. Turns up to this house, knocks on the door. Beyoncé opens it.
No.
Jay-Z's behind her.
Shut up.
Is it Blue Ivy, their kid?
Yes.
Blue Ivy. So she goes, I had to do a one girl party because I was doing the limbo and I had my iPod on shuffle. Beyonce comes on. She goes, I'm doing the limbo. Beyonce's going underneath my little thing with Beyonce on my speaker.
That's the coolest thing ever.
That would be cool. Yeah, Beyonce, Jay-Z would be a good one too.
That would be a good one, yeah. We love famous people. I feel a bit sad for them. After watching all the documentaries that I watch and all the TV shows and everything, it's not an easy job, I don't think, being really that famous.
I don't think it's a popular opinion to feel sorry for famous people, but we certainly do, particularly anyone living with an addiction deserves sympathy and support. Yeah. Doesn't matter if you're famous and rich and in the limelight or you're not, everyone deserves a fair crack, I think.
Yeah, totally agree with you, Haim. Anything you want to add to
this? What we're saying this episode, just in case you and I get mega famous, we're covering our backs here. Yeah. So you
have
listening can help us out.
For us, motherfuckers.
If we get famous and relapse, please reach out and help us. Don't just call us wankers of being rich and famous.
Yeah. Just in case that ever happens, which is extremely unlikely. But yeah, seeing as we're in the library doing in our free podcast studio, not wearing Ralph Lauren, are we, Hamish? He's got a heaps normal t-shirt on. I've got some trainers.
Mine's got holes in the armpits. It's a free t-shirt and it's now got holes in the armpits.
Yeah, we're not rich and famous quite yet. No. We'll let you know when we are. There'll be a day that comes, Hamish will go, this is it. We're rich and famous.
When we're
now
wearing new t-shirts with no holes in it, we've made it.
The day that I know I'm famous is when I'm invited on the Adam Buxton show.
Nice.
Desert Island Disc.
Yeah.
And I go on the boat out of Below Deck.
Yeah, so you're the person who's bought the boat.
I'm going to be the wanker on Below Deck that hires the boat and complains about the food.
I will know I'm famous when I get a chef.
Yes, a living chef.
Yeah, and I think I even struggle with that because they're in my house all the time, but I think I can live with it. Or a driver.
Yeah.
I would like to present the Graham Norton show.
Oh, gosh, that's a big...
I don't want to go on the... I want to be the Graham Norton. They'd probably have to change the name.
I think we'll end this show by me bringing you back down to earth and saying, that is never going to happen. Just so you know. So you don't aim too high and get disappointed. None of that.
Hey, go back to your just wanting fresh t-shirts dream.
Just go back to the podcast, bring your ego out of the sky and come back down to my level.
I'm not even a big name in Kiwana.
not in the Kiwana Library.
I'm not even the most famous person in Kiwana Library right now.
There's Dave that delivers the sandwiches outside. He's more famous than you. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
If you're questioning your relationship with booze, you're struggling to moderate, or your hangovers are causing anxiety, it might be time to reach out for some support.
Yeah, just talk to a mate about how you're feeling, contact a local doctor, find an AA or sobriety group. Vic's got one.
Yeah, just head to www.cuppa.community.
Remember, if you're questioning yourself, it might be time to seek support.
Even though this journey can be awkward, it is definitely worth it. And if you've enjoyed the Sober Awkward podcast, don't forget to review it, rate it, and share it with your mates.
They have to share it with their mates?
Yeah, of course they do. I'm not doing this for nothing, Hamish. Bloody hell.
How do they share it?
I don't know, just write it on the...
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So, as you probably know, my comedy memoir, A Thousand Wasted Sundays, is officially out. All my magnificent fuckuppery in one awkward hit. If you'd like to get your hands on a copy, it's now available from all good bookstores.
We always say all good bookstores, don't we? Yeah. Are there bad bookstores?
No, it's probably ones with moody sellers.
Oh, yeah, really depressed librarian folks.
Yes, okay. So there are probably some, but we're only storing it in the good ones.
It's only made it into the goodies.
You can also get it from all good online retailers. The print version and ebook are out now, and the audiobook will be available in March. I've been writing my memoir for 5 years. It will make you laugh, cry and cringe, and hopefully inspire a few people to reconsider their relationship with booze. If you love the podcast, then I think you'll love the book, even if I do say so myself. Hamish has read it. What did you think?
I feel like I know a little bit too much about you now, to be honest, Vic. Look, I really loved it. It was hilarious and surprisingly moving, but I feel like I've seen you naked in a literary sense.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's worrying.
Yeah. From an emotional point of view, seriously, it wobbled my teeny weeny wooden heart, Vic.
Okay.
My teeny little wooden heart.
Well, his teeny little, his wooden heart is broken. Anyway, so if you do manage to get your filthy mitts on a copy, please do me a favour and head to goodreads.com and give me a review. Doing that will help me get it out there to those that need a bit of sober support. So there you have it. My story, unwanted warts and all. Come and get awkward with me.
Not to be too demanding or anything, but seriously, go and buy it.
Yeah,
now.
Go and buy it. Go and buy it right now.
Yeah, don't just tell your friends. Buy it and then buy your friends one or two.
Yeah, yeah, don't give them a copy. Yeah. Buy it. Yeah.
And you know what? Don't be careful where you store it. If you lose it, you can always buy another five.
Yeah, buy another one.
Yeah.